And a good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today we'll be talking about a new book from UK Press. It's called The Historic Kentucky Kitchen, and it's written by Deirdre Skaggs, who is an associate dean of the University of Kentucky Special Collections and the author of Women in Lexington. She lives in Lexington. Also writing this book was Andrew McGraw, who is a chef at the Country Club restaurant over in Lexington. Deirdre Skaggs joins us today on the program. Deirdre, thanks for spending some time with us on Front Page.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about this book. I've had a chance to kind of go through it and maybe the idea behind it.
Well, working in special collections, we have a lot of family collections from around Kentucky, and in the process of working with one of those collections, Andrew came across a set of recipes, and we both loved food and talking about food, and that's how it started, just talking about how interesting it would be to take something that was in the archives and bring it to life in this really tangible way by cooking the recipes, and from there it turned into this awesome cookbook.
So you and Andrew actually went in there and tried out some of these recipes?
We tested every single recipe and failed at a lot of them and did not include those. But, yeah, they're all tested, and they're not modified, but they are standardized to things that the contemporary home cook would be familiar with or used to, standard measurements and cooking times and actual instructions in many cases.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about some of the successful ones, but first I want to ask you about some of the fails, basically, and maybe why you failed. Was it because maybe the directions have changed over the years and maybe some of the requirements for making these things work?
I think there's a lot of reasons why some of them failed. I mean, you know, in many cases we couldn't figure it out because there was so little information. The first recipe that we actually tested with the idea of putting it in the cookbook was a complete failure.
What was it?
White Mountain Cake.
And, sounds good.
We tried it 3 times in a row and trying different things, you know, doing research, and each time it was awful. It had no flavor. It was uncooked and overcooked at the same time. So despite that, we moved on to another recipe that was a great success. And since then, I found in many of our family collections quite a few recipes for White Mountain Cake, but I haven't tried it again.
How many recipes in total did you try out? How many are actually in the book, too, as well?
There's a little over 100 in the book, and I would say we tried anywhere from, you know, 150 to 200 recipes.
Hmm. Well, that's a lot of recipes. That's a lot of eating, too. Did you put on some pounds doing this? Or
10 pounds, to be exact.
Well, it sounds like it was probably a fun way to research a book.
It was. It was a lot of fun.
Well, as I look at this, the one thing that struck me, and you talked about it here a moment ago, that you actually had to convert some of the measurements for some of these recipes so that people could actually understand what they were dealing with and what you were talking about.
Right, and we include that in the beginning of the cookbook, you know, so if someone was to go out or if you had your own family recipes, you could use this as a reference tool. So if you want to know, for instance, how much butter the size of a walnut is, it's roughly 2 tablespoons. But that was one of the measurements we encountered in going through these recipes.
Did you have to adjust the recipes in any way as you were going through this process?
Most of the ingredient adjustments that we made were based on the type of fat that they were using in the recipe. You know, we didn't use lard because we wanted people to be able to cook it and it'd be a little bit healthier. Things like one recipe called for cottolene, which was a fat made from beef tallow that isn't available anymore. So those were the bulk of the adjustments that we had to make as far as something that could potentially affect the flavor.
Well, there was a term in there I've seen in fictional books about times going by where they talk about sweet milk, and mm-hmm. I always wondered what that was exactly, but you also explained that.
Right. And, you know, there are a little bit of differences now that you mention it. You know, a lot of the recipes alternatively called for sour milk, which is actually milk that has gone sour and not buttermilk that, you know, that we would use today. And so in a lot of those, you know, in some cases we did use actual buttermilk, but sometimes we, you know, tried to sour milk using lemon juice or things like that. I didn't actually let the milk go bad. Our milk is so processed, you know, it would take a, it wouldn't be like getting fresh milk and setting it out and letting it go bad in the same way.
Yeah, I thought about that too, in the sense that you may wind up adding cottage cheese.
Right.
If you let it sit out for too long.
Although one of the pies that I made that was a failure was similar to soured cottage cheese, actually.
A lot of these recipes, I mean, they date way, way back.
They do, and I was really, you know, I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions going into this about, you know, how far back we could find recipes, but I was really excited by both how early they were, but also how well the recipes have really stood up to the test of time as far as still being really good, and to me they seemed very sophisticated in many cases, not necessarily in how they were prepared necessarily, but just being both simple and elegant at the same time. So,
were you surprised at all by that level of sophistication in some of these old-time recipes?
I was. I wasn't prepared to see how much, and I don't know why. I mean, I should have, I guess, expected it, to see how much of the French influence and English influence there was in this cooking. You know, so many of these recipes start with a roux and, you know, some classic techniques that people would still use today.
What's the oldest recipe in the book?
The, you know, it's a toss-up. One set of recipes is from the Wasson family, and it was really hard to date that group of recipes. So it's approximately, based on our research, around 1835 to 1856. And so that would either be the cream cake or the blackberry jam cake. And the oldest dated recipe is the lemon custard pie, which was also the first successful recipe that we had. And it's around the 1850s.
Were you worried at all about tackling some of these really, really old recipes that are, you know, what, nearly a couple of hundred years old?
Oh, yeah. And like I have mentioned, you know, many of them just had so little instructions because it would be something that would have been commonly known at the time. And so it was hard to accept failing at many of them, and also, you know, we were trying to support local farmers and local businesses, and so we were buying local milk and local eggs, and, you know, when they failed, it was also financially devastating.
You talked about, I think you bring up a really good point in the sense that people back then cooked things a lot differently than we cook things now, obviously, and I talked about the experimentation possibly involved with some of these recipes. Did you have to kind of do some of that with the actual cooking in terms of, I wonder how they did it this way or how they did it that way, and maybe you had to kind of adjust here and there?
Yeah, especially with many of the baked goods, you know, they could have been using all kinds of different methods to, you know, cook their food, either wood or, you know, using big, heavy cast iron vessels and things like that. And so we got better at it over time, both with experience and just becoming familiar with the recipes. And a lot of times it would just say, you know, a quick oven. And so we had to do a lot of, you know, really careful watching sometimes. And we had to be a lot more willing, I think, or at least for me anyway, to start to just sort of trust and rely on our experience and intuition in some cases, you know, to trust the way something looked as we were, you know, preparing it, or look at the consistency and things like that, you know, which was something my grandmother, you know, she used very few recipes because that's what she did. She, you know, trusted in the way her food felt as she was preparing it, if it was a dough or, you know, how the consistency and texture looked. And so I think that was a little bit different of an approach for me.
Well, a lot of the old recipes were sort of oral histories in a sense, weren't they?
Right, yeah.
I imagine you were pretty glad, though, to have Andrew with you working on this. I mean, with his knowledge of the culinary arts, it's kind of like having the parachute before you jump out of the plane.
It was, but, you know, often we were just jumping out together, and, you know, he was really helpful, you know, with, well, I mean, tons of the recipes, but, you know, having that solid foundation of different cooking techniques, it was really great to be able to, you know, both rely on that and just to have someone to always ask for their opinion or advice, you know, just to get someone else to be like, yeah, I think we should put a tablespoon of that in there.
Did he ever say to you, I've never seen anything like this before, and I have no idea what we're supposed to do here?
Oh, yeah, that happened a lot all through the process for both of us.
Well, that had to be kind of frustrating, but at the same time, I mean, walking through the looking glass and having a chance to experiment maybe a little bit might be sort of fun.
It was, you know, especially, I mean, obviously there were way more successes than failures, and so, you know, always waiting for that moment to finish something and being able to taste it was so exciting, especially when, you know, the recipe turned out really good. And so, I mean, that certainly kept us going. You know, near the end, as we were trying to finish up the actual testing phase to submit the completed manuscript, it got to be a little bit like work when we were, you know, each of us would have maybe 10 recipes that we would have to make that week, and none of them may have actually made a real meal, so you're always eating weird things at odd times and going out and buying more stuff at the grocery store to cook it again, cooking breakfast at night and whatever we needed to do to finish.
Where did you do the test cooking?
Both in his kitchen and my kitchen. So we did it at our houses. We did a lot of things together when we could because it was more fun, but we did a lot of things on our own as well. And I don't have a dishwasher, and he did, but his broke during this process. So,
well, I was figuring that if you did it in a certain building, that you may have made a whole lot of new friends as you were going through the process of testing the recipes.
We had a lot of people who knew that they were what they were doing, and some people who didn't. You know, we would just bring food places and gauge people's reactions. So lots of people here at UK tested lots of our food, and neighbors and friends and family members and anyone we could get to eat some of the things we were cooking.
Did you have a shortage of volunteers for taste testers?
God, no.
I didn't think so. But looking at the actual recipes themselves, and you mentioned you found these, I guess, in some archives. Is that right?
Or mm-hmm.
Where were they?
Several different family collections. UK is a land-grant institution, and so our mission in special collections is fairly broad in terms of what we collect. You know, we are here to support the entire Commonwealth of Kentucky, so we have collections that span geography in Kentucky and, you know, everyday families and certainly families that are historically were wealthy here in central Kentucky. So some of the collections, we have the Frances Jewell McVeigh papers here in Special Collections, and she was a dean of women here at the University of Kentucky, but she went on later to marry one of UK's presidents, Frank McVeigh. So we have her papers, and she was really active in terms of gardening and farming, and she published a lot, and she also hosted a lot of events at Maxwell Place where they lived here on campus. And so she has just lots of handwritten recipes in her collection that she used for entertaining at Maxwell Place. And the challenge with her collection was that she was often entertaining a very large crowd, so scaling down her recipes to something manageable for us to test was pretty challenging.
Were a lot of these handwritten?
Yeah, we tried to predominantly only use the handwritten recipes. We felt like those were recipes that, you know, were more significant, potentially more used, and that they had more meaning, and that many of them were potentially had never been published before, could have been handed down by friends and families and things like that. We did fill in with really early Kentucky cookbooks because we wanted it to be a well-rounded cookbook for today's home cook. But predominantly, it was all handwritten recipes.
Was it tough at times to decipher some of the handwriting?
Sometimes it was really challenging. Not only was the handwriting really difficult to read, but, you know, often they were on scraps of paper and paper that was deteriorated or well-used and worn, or the writing could be faded or it could, you know, bleed through on both sides. But being able to scan the recipes digitally really helped, because then we could zoom in on aspects of the text and we could change the levels to make it darker or lighter, so we could try and decipher what was written down. But yeah, that was one of the big challenges throughout.
Well, Deirdre, as you and Andrew McGraw got into this project, I know you're probably pretty excited about it, but did it turn out to be much more difficult than what you'd anticipated, or was it about what you anticipated?
I don't think it was. I mean, we went into the project, you know, we were just excited about it and so excited about talking about it, and we had done a sample and submitted it to the university press and they were interested in it, and you know, then we really launched into it, and it remained so much fun for those 2 years that you know, any time that it was difficult or overwhelming or we were failing at making some of the recipes, you know, anytime we would have a success and, you know, taste something really good, then we were super excited all over again. So that helped us through. And plus just the process of discovery and finding the collections and being impressed by the things that we were eating was enough to keep us really excited through the whole process. I mean, it was a lot of work. I mean, in that sense, it was perhaps a lot. I didn't really think about the level of work that we would have to do, both in terms of research into the families, research into Kentucky history, research into Southern food culture, research into cooking techniques. So I think that's something that I was so excited that I didn't think about the reality of all of that. And, you know, it was a 3-year process all in all.
Again, we'll remind folks that your book is The Historic Kentucky Kitchen. It has all sorts of traditional recipes, and they're actually produced for today's cook. Our guest today on the front page is Deirdre Skaggs. She wrote this book along with Chef Andrew McGraw. And we are going to take a break on the show, come back with Deirdre and more on Front Page right after this.
Support for MSPR is provided by Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. From small towns to big cities, wherever you go in Kentucky, there's a good chance you'll see a Toyota Camry. And for good reason. It's America's best-selling sedan made right here in the Bluegrass. But Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky does more than build world-class cars in Kentucky. They're an important part of our communities, providing thousands of jobs and millions in donations to local organizations. Toyota is honored to be a part of your community.
Once again, the book is called The Historic Kentucky Kitchen. It includes recipes from all the way back in the 1800s, and they're traditional recipes that are actually set up for today's cook. And our guest is one of the authors of this book, Deirdre Skaggs. She wrote this with Chef Andrew McGraw. And Deirdre, as we continue our discussion, I know that we should talk about some of the contents of what's in here. I mean, you've got breakfast stuff in here. You've got sides. You've got soups. You've got stews. You've got main courses. You've got beverages even, and desserts, which is kind of my favorite part of the book.
Yeah, I did a lot of the dessert cooking throughout the process, so I'm pretty attached to the desserts myself. Some of my favorite desserts that are in here, there is a buttermilk cake that I've made for a lot of the book signings and for several, you know, events and, you know, family events since I've made it the first time. I've made it a lot. It's one of my favorite dessert recipes. And again, it's one of those really simple cakes that it just tastes so good when you use, you know, really good ingredients.
I'm going to ask you about one that kind of caught my eye that I was wondering about, and I was hoping you could kind of fill me in about the 1-2-3-4 cake.
That is also a very good cake. And, you know, what we say about the cake is that, you know, it should be, or it will be, the go-to birthday cake for, you know, any birthday celebration. And it was just such a great cake, and we paired it with the chocolate icing. It was, this handwritten recipe is included in the cookbook, which was something else that was really important to us, to have as many of those representations in the book. But, you know, it's, the ingredients come in increments of 1, 2, 3, and 4, so it's a pretty just descriptive title for the cake recipe. And the chocolate icing is just, you know, also really simple and, you know, much thinner than like a store-bought icing that you might get for a cake, but just so full of flavor. I love this cake.
Yeah, I thought it sounded pretty good, too, and I think maybe I'm going to have to take a shot at that one,
yeah,
if nothing else.
Yeah, really good. And it's Lucy Hayes Breckenridge. It's one of her recipes. That's she had a whole handwritten, almost like a journal, bound journal of recipes, and she has exquisite handwriting. So hers were always a joy to come across and attempt.
Well, in the front of the book, you talk about egg dishes, and I eat a lot of eggs, and I caught on that. I like scrambled eggs a lot. You have a great variety of those, too, so those are kind of a personal favorite of mine.
You know, they are, and they range from egg dishes that are really light to those that are not so light. But in that section is as well, I guess that's later, but it does have eggs in it. The Logan English zucchini and eggs, that was the recipe that Andrew came across that started this whole process. But with the eggs, to talk about the stuffed eggs just for a second, that was something that I thought was really important to include in a cookbook that would address, you know, regional cooking and southern cooking. I felt like there had to be something that was like deviled eggs, and, you know, these are just called stuffed eggs, and they're made with butter instead of mayonnaise, and I was glad that I only made 3 of them so that I didn't sit and eat any more. But as an alternative suggestion, it does say that the eggs could be, one, covered with a white sauce and baked with breadcrumbs, or you can put the halves back together, dip them in breadcrumbs, and fry them. So there's a range of possibilities in the egg dishes.
We've got about a minute left on the show. What about main courses? Did you have a favorite there?
Lots of favorites. There's a recipe that calls for partridges, but we used Cornish game hens, and it's stuffed with sweet potatoes. It's wrapped in bacon, and that was one of the big surprises for me because it's just such a sophisticated dish. But there's also a chicken pie, which is sort of like a chicken pot pie, but it's both really good and looks like something you would get in a fancy restaurant today.
Well, you mentioned something with bacon, so you had my attention right away. I mean, almost everything is good with bacon.
It's true.
You know, bacon and bacon is fine with me, too, as well. But it's a fun read, I have to admit. I enjoyed going through the book and checking some things out that maybe we'd like to try at home, too, as well. Deirdre, how could people get a copy of the book that you and Andrew wrote?
Well, if you are in Lexington, it's at, you know, any of the bookstores here. It's also available at Amazon, so they can find it that way.
All right. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us today on the Front Page. It's a fun book. It's The Historic Kentucky Kitchen. Again, Deirdre Skaggs, one of the authors of the book. She wrote this with Chef Andrew McGraw. Deirdre, thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Chuck Morales, your host of the Front Page. We'll see you next time. Thank you.